Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/Saint14Project.
He froze for the whole outro.
You can't get you can't pay for this sort of entertainment. This is the only kind of entertainment that you get for free here at Project Guardians and Saint 14 Project Podcast.
Podcast. I'm Sentinel Dad, one of your hosts, also known as Alex. With me this week is Average Joe and Dr. Goku. Hatchy Dave can't make it this week, but he and all his Only Farmers followers are here in spirit. What's up, boys?
What's up?
Hey, everyone.
What's going on? How you guys been?
Busy.
Likewise.
Yeah, same here. Awesome. But to fill the void that is Hatchy Dave, we got with us an awesome streamer on Mixer, a friend of the project, and the founder and leader of the One of Us gaming community over on Mixer, Rock City Roller. What's up, buddy?
Hello.
What's up, dude?
How you been?
I'm, like Goku said, busy.
Right.
We're in the middle of a basement remodel. So I'm cheap, so instead of having somebody manage the project, I've been managing that and organizing contractors and doing some of the work myself, so it's been run.
Right.
Nice. That's awesome, dude. What are you doing, just refinishing it?
Yeah, we got a ranch, so we're going to finish the basement and basically double our square footage.
Oh, wow.
Nice. So we'll have a big playroom for the little man, new stream den for daddy. And finished laundry room, bunch of storage space. It's going to be really nice once it's done, but, man, it's a lot of work up front.
It's funny that you say a new streaming space for daddy. It's in more like, you know, this is where you could put all your crap. You know,
yeah, it sounds a lot better when I say that we're building a stream den. But, yeah. Really, it's I'm being relegated to the basement.
Nice, dude. That's awesome.
I'm relegated to the basement, too, so.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I'm the kids' playroom. It's just like I get a corner. You'll see kids' art on the wall and stuff.
Yeah, my theater office is in the basement / storage.
This week, so before we get going with the show summary, Rock, why don't you tell us about your community over there on Mixer?
So the One of Us community, we started this probably about a year and a half ago. Shortly after I had originally moved over to Mixer, I ran into a few people that we frequented in some of the same channels and stuff like that. They reached out and said, hey, we were starting kind of a community, and they invited me over, so I joined their Discord, and it was based around their stream team at the time. And so I hung out there for a little bit. Ultimately, they brought me on pretty early on, and we kind of created our core group of like five founders, and it's just kind of grown from there. And we kind of base ourselves off the values of trying to be all inclusive. So pretty much as long as you're a kind individual who enjoys playing games and having fun and helping to lift each other up, you're welcome in our Discord and our community. And we've grown quicker than I think any of us ever expected it to. I think the last time I checked, we were over 2,500 members, and just in our Discord server, then a lot more, you know, in the Mixer channels and things like that. But we've been managing to keep everybody in check. We're relatively drama free, and we've met some incredible people through growing that community. It's been really really humbling.
That's awesome, man.
That's fantastic, and you also have a podcast associated with it. Is that like that's an interview format, right?
Yeah, so like I've podcasted in the past, like on, you know, various different shows with friends and stuff like that. But, you know, after we saw the massive growth in the community, and obviously, you know, my channel grew just in association with that, I wanted to find a way to kind of give back to our community. And I've been looking for a new project to take on in like a podcast format. So it dawned on me one day driving to work in the truck. I'm like, well, what if I just, you know, bring on different members of the community, people who are active in Discord and active in the channels, and give them a platform to tell their stories and share their selves with the greater community, you know,
right.
Kind of have the conversations that we can't necessarily have in a stream chat, because, you know, you want to be able to tell a story, and it's really hard while chat's flying past to get a good, you know, 20-minute story in. So the community's loved it. You know, we started out with the stream team, and now we've I think we're at like 30 some odd episodes where we've brought a different person on each time and kind of asked, you know, we start out with the basics, you know, where, you know, how did you get into gaming? How did you get into content creation? But then it just goes wherever it goes. And then the community comes out with a bunch of questions. Some of them are genuine, and some of them are a little bit trolly. But we go through those, and we have a good time.
Fantastic. That's really awesome, like, when you kind of get to that place where everything is just sinks, and it's just really easy going, and there's no drama.
Yeah,
it's always such an awesome feeling.
And it's been an incredibly supportive community, just for, like, I mean, they just want to absorb all the content that we're creating. And then the people in the community are amazing content creators. And, you know, I recently, probably about 2 weeks ago, actually moved back over to Twitch, and my community followed. A lot of these people had never been on Twitch. Like, they made accounts and linked their Amazon accounts and, you know, threw Twitch Prime subs at me, even though I was, you know, not on Mixer at the time. And it's just like that type of stuff is just so humbling, because I still to this day feel like I kind of just stumbled into this whole thing,
right?
You know, but to see everybody show up in force and come out to visit me over across the internet is really, really cool.
Awesome. Well, fantastic. We are super glad that you're here. But this week, for a mental health topic, we are going to be talking about mindfulness, and we're going to kind of, since Rock is here, we're going to tie that into managing a large community as well. And Dr. Goku's going to have an awesome analysis on Osiris from the Destiny franchise. The only warlock I respect. I'm just kidding.
Not even Toland?
He's so
or right. Ikora? Ikora could kick everyone's ass.
Ikora is so obnoxious, though.
She's scary, though.
She's scary.
If you read
the lore, Ikora was a force to be reckoned with in the Crucible.
Well, yeah. She was in like the Warlock Illuminati.
She's the house you skip on Halloween.
If the Vanguard splits, I'm siding with her. That's all I'm saying.
I agree.
Why, out of fear?
out of wanting to win.
Dude, I join you, man, but she gives horrific wedgies.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
She's got a 1,000-yard stare.
Yeah, that's why all the warlocks wear dresses, right?
Did she give Shax a limp or something?
I think that was Mara.
He healed.
Oh, I caught that. Good one.
Wow. And so yeah. What have we all been playing this week? What have you been playing lately, Rock?
Destiny. It's hard to pull myself away right now. That was part of the decision to move back to Twitch, is that I just want to focus on Destiny content right now. I can't put the game down. Like, Season of Opulence and everything that they've shown from Shadowkeep just kind of reignited that passion. And it's the game that, you know, since D1 Alpha, like, I've always come back to. So,
right. It's pretty much what makes you, why was that the catalyst to move you to Twitch? You know, like, what's the difference between broadcasting Destiny on Twitch and Mixer?
Yeah, I'm curious about this.
So there's a there's differences in viewership on the two platforms. And I play 100% on PC. I've been on Xbox once in the last year and a half, and that was because I lost a bet.
But really?
Yeah. But PC content, and specifically like non-BR content, tends to struggle on Mixer because that's not what the viewership is looking for at this time. And I think a lot of that has to do with the way that the platform is embedded into Xboxes, right? So if you pull up your Xbox, you know, you see Mixer on the front page. So I had started spending more time like watching friends on Twitch and things like that. And the community surrounding Destiny, and specifically PC Destiny, is very strong on Twitch right now. And I have a lot of friends on the platform that are playing here. So the move kind of lets me continue making the content that I wanted to make. And when I was chasing numbers or, you know, paying attention to channel growth on Mixer, like a lot of times what I was doing is changing the games that I was playing in hopes to chase whatever the Mixer trend was for the week. And I didn't like that in myself. So I wanted to move to a platform that I felt that I could have a better chance to be successful with the content that I want to make. Does that make any sense?
Yeah,
sense in my head.
That's the only place that matters, buddy.
That's right. But yeah, no, I mean, at the end of the day, like I feel like for the type of content that I make, like the high knowledge, you know, sweaty amount of information about Destiny, Twitch is just the place to be right now.
Gotcha. Right on. Now you said like you always come back to Destiny. Like, what other games have you dabbled in a lot?
So recently, I played a lot of. I got onto a high res kick. I played a lot of Realm Royale and Paladins.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I play Paladins on PC and PS4.
Yeah, so I think actually for our last charity stream for Project Guardians, that's what I had done on my block, as we played right. a bunch of Paladins. Game super fun. I got into Division 2 for quite a while.
Right.
Looter shooters are really like my bread and butter. I have been helping to test a new skateboarding game that's on PC. So I was really heavily invested in like Skate 1, Skate 2, and Skate 3 back in the day on Xbox. And there's a new game called Skater XL that's currently in early access on Steam that I've been helping to alpha test and give feedback, and trying to make some content on that too. So I've been playing a little bit of that, but it always ends up coming back to Destiny.
That's such a cool opportunity though, too.
Yeah, so and part of it was because of my involvement back in the day. So like I've got a YouTube channel that is now, you know, essentially defunct. Probably 200 or 300 skate videos on it, because we used to get together and we'd make like actual skateboarding videos out of EA Skate. And so because of that and some of the friends that I made back then, I was turned on to this opportunity to help test this game. And it's been a really cool experience, you know, working directly with the developers. They send us new builds, and then, you know, 2 days later they're calling us and we're doing a video chat kind of like this to talk about what we liked and what we didn't like, and giving direction on the game. And it's been coming along really nicely.
Right on, dude. That's awesome. Dr. Goku, what you been playing?
Well, Destiny's trying to hold me back in lately, but really I've been wholeheartedly into Spider-Man on PS4.
Nice.
And that's pretty much anything I've been playing lately. It's been two and a half weeks now, and I'm in the final act, and I'm getting close to platinuming that game.
Nice.
Fantastic. And it is a phenomenal game.
Yeah.
Anyone that has a PS4, I recommend playing it.
Yeah, I might pick it up when it goes on sale again. If it's not on sale right now.
Yeah, a lot of people compared it to the Batman Arkham games in terms of the fighting style.
Okay.
But it fits so much better with Spider-Man. The controls are so much more fluid.
I think it was just on sale too. Like, yeah, just probably. The other day.
And it's the first game that really nailed the web swinging.
That's what I heard when it first came out, yeah.
Hey, Lego Spider-Man did pretty damn good, you know.
Because a lot of the old Spider-Man games, you would just web just in the air. But yeah. This one, every time your web attaches to something, it's onto a building or onto something, and it keeps your momentum going. It's really big on physics.
I love that you brought that up, because how many times have people just brought up, like, where does the web go? There's nothing around him. There's no buildings. It's sky. What's it holding on to?
My wife asks that every time we watch a Spider-Man movie.
See? Yeah.
No, really?
And in Spider-Man PS4, there's, of course, Central Park. So where does the webbing go? Well, so you web on to trees or lampposts. And change the way you swing. They did a amazing job.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely have to check it out next time it goes on sale.
Because I know Insomniac's a really good developer, but I wouldn't have pegged them as a studio that would have done Spider-Man.
I think Spider-Man's one of the games that has gotten me... One of the games on my list that's gotten me close to buying a PS4.
Not quite, but close.
Real close. And then I remember that I don't have any money to buy a PS4. And then I stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah, PS4's list of exclusives is getting up there.
Yeah.
Nice. Joe, what you been up to? What you been playing?
I've just been pretty much strictly playing Destiny 2. I got really back into comp play lately. I haven't played comp since I was telling Rock before we all got on that I kind of got the itch to start going after those pinnacle weapons. They're really good all the way around, but I haven't been into comp since Trials went away. So it was really nice getting back into it, and I was on a hot streak for a while on Friday, and then a friend, Lego, jumped in and helped me out, and it was a lot of fun playing with him. The guy's a riot and just a genuinely nice guy, and we had a blast. And then I finished it and got my recluse the night after. I needed like two more matches. So jumped in, got that done, and now I'm on the second step of the Luna's Howl quest, and I have half the sniper rifle done already, and Mountaintop, I might have to pay someone on eBay to get that, because holy crap, man.
Is it just impossible?
The grenade kills. Like, the grenade launcher kills. It's outrageous. I'll never do it. I'll never get it. I am not a good shot with that thing. At all. That thing would have to have, what's that weapon? Jorn? Is that it?
Jotun.
Yeah, the thing that magically... Yeah, I'll need a Galahorn to get it, essentially. Yeah. But no, that's about it. So I've been playing a lot of PvP and comp PvP and Destiny and enjoying Iron Banner right now.
Nice. I finally... Because it was on sale, it was on crazy sale. Two weeks ago, I went ahead and finally picked up Grand Theft Auto V, and I've been loving it. Love it.
Oh, it's a good game.
You just picked up Grand Theft Auto V?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, just did. Yeah, and I've been doing the story and been playing, because I have a bunch of friends that play GTA Online, the online component of it. And I've been playing a lot with them, but I've been really enjoying the story, and I know we're going to talk about it later, but it was a perfect time with the latest casino update and all the Twitch Prime stuff you get, all the extra goodies, but I've been loving it. It's a really good time.
Picked up on PC or on PS4?
PS4, just because it was cheaper on there. And okay. And my wife, who's like evolving her video game... life, so she saw me playing Grand Theft Auto V, and like she sat down and watched me play some of the story missions. And she goes, "Iken has?" I was like, "Yeah, I guess." So I made her an account, and like I can't pull her away from it. She loves it, and so
she said, "Just like that, Iken has."
Yeah. No, it's exactly what she said.
We all want our wives to get into games until they take the controller away, and then. You're like, wait a minute.
Right. I know. And the PlayStation's right here, right next to my mic. So like I change some settings and I like record on Audacity like a good half hour just sitting down here with her listening to her play it. I gotta find out a way to publish it, put it on YouTube or something, because it's a good time.
Turn the camera on. Borrow a Zoom meeting and start it and hit record.
All right. Well, I have a PlayStation camera. I can do that. I'll make that work.
But anyways. Just streaming on Twitch.
Sentinel Dad was never heard from again.
I'll hook it up to like a random YouTube account.
That and then record reactions from you cutting in.
No one follow me at gmail.com. Anyways, Dr. Goku, why don't you kind of take us through our mental health topic this week?
Sure. So you had mentioned to discuss mindfulness.
Joe did, yes.
Mindfulness is going to be a large topic that we're not going to go too in-depth to today, just because it's going to be like 4 hours. So I'm just going to go into a brief kind of definition and discussion on what it is. In a whole, mindfulness is the short term of what's called mindfulness meditation practice. It's kind of the third wave of therapy, and it's a form of self-awareness that's adapted from Buddhist mindfulness meditation. It's all about being aware of what's happening in the present moment, moment by moment, without making judgments about what we notice. And it's a key ingredient in multiple different types of therapies like DBT or ACT. When we really look into mindfulness, we need to look at how time progresses. There's the past, the present, and the future. So the past is we're ruminating on things. When we think about the future, we're worrying about things. When we're in the present, we're just being. And that's the whole key behind mindfulness. It's being in this present moment and just doing what we're doing. And I'm sure everyone here is kind of a culprit of this. Take an example of watching a TV show. How often do you watch a TV show and look at your phone at the same time?
All the time.
Way too much.
At that time, you are not being mindful because you're splitting your attention between your phone and the TV show. A key principle of mindfulness is if you're watching the TV show, you're only watching the TV show, and that's the entirety of what you're doing. Every time that you have a thought that can be an intruding thought that takes you away from what you're doing, you don't judge that thought. You don't get angry at that thought. You're able to let it go and bring yourself back to the activity that you were doing. It sounds easy, but it's actually kind of really hard.
I feel so seen.
Yeah, I feel targeted by this topic.
When we think about mindfulness, we're thinking about thoughts, feelings, behaviors, psychological changes. It helps us focus on what we're doing, not what has happened or what will happen. And it's a way for us to relax. It's a way for us to reset and just be. And it, in a way, it helps us live a more fulfilling life because our general society has a very fast-paced momentum. We're always thinking about the things that we need to do, the things that need to be done, rather than just focusing on the here and now. The benefits of mindfulness is giving you a stability of mind, having a flexibility of mind, being self-aware, and be able to act rather than react at what's going on. I don't know if any of you had any questions or anything you wanted to talk about mindfulness.
Yeah, can you expand on that in like as far as like in a on like a larger group setting, like how important it is for either starting or improving relationships in like a larger group setting, community setting?
Well, being mindful is focusing on, like I mentioned, on the here and now. So focusing on what's going on rather than on what's going to happen. So even you're in a group setting, you're focusing on what you're doing in the moment. If you're all out to a restaurant, you're focusing on the individuals that are sitting with you rather than what you're going to be doing later or when the server is going to come. You're focusing on specifically on the conversation and just on that conversation.
I run into issues with this at like work, like specifically with meetings, like pulling people together and trying to get people to ignore their phones, ignore the emails coming in, and focus on, you know, the task at hand. And what we've preached, like our group has preached, like my boss and myself, is like the 100, we call it the 100-mile rule, in that if you get an email, you get a phone call. Like if it's not something that you wouldn't walk 100 miles to take care of, then it's not important enough to subset that meeting. So usually that just means like family, kids, you know, things like that. But it helps to remind people to focus on what we're trying to work on. And it kind of works along that same thing. It's like if you're out to dinner, focus on the conversations and the connections you're having. But like in a meeting, focus on the task that you're trying to complete.
And I know I bring up this topic often, but phones are one of the most useful tools we have, but also the easiest way that we are taken out of mindfulness practice.
Yeah.
You mentioned a meeting. The way we form meaningful connections is by having meaningful conversations with people.
Mm-hmm.
If we take out our phones, we're not having these meaningful conversations. Even though we may think that we are, just having our phones there is taking our attention away. Even if it's for a minute or two from what we're doing.
Yeah, I've always preached the concept of if you're talking to somebody, like not even have, like I've always noticed the nice trick where somebody puts their phone on the table, right? But it's face up, and then it rings and they glance at it and they're like, oh, don't worry, I don't need to take that, like you're more important. But obviously not, because you've got your phone out, like you're not paying attention to what we're talking about right now.
The second the phone is on the table, it sends a message that whatever happens on that device, whether it be face up or down, is more important than what I am doing with you.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. I love a part of mindfulness is also like the acceptance of yourself as well, like accepting yourself. You know, same thing you were saying about focus on the present, the conversation you're having at the dinner table, at a restaurant with your friends, focusing on the conversation. It's treating yourself like you would treat one of your good friends. I mean, you know, accepting your emotions and everything else and not overthinking things and letting your mind go all over the place, but bringing it to the present and focusing down. There's some really great exercises that you can do with mindfulness.
The one I recommend to a lot of my clients just to start experiencing mindfulness is a really hard one for a lot of people, which is go out at a park, sit on a bench, and just sit.
Yep.
For 5 minutes. Just be there. Don't look at your phone. Don't think about your phone. Just think about what is going on around you. And then when you're doing that, notice the sensation of feeling uncomfortable, because that sensation is going to come. You're going to feel uncomfortable. You're going to worry about what other people will think, how other people will see you. And then take that thought, let it pass, and come back to what you're doing. Listen to the birds, listen to the cars, listen to your breathing. Because mindfulness is not just being in the present. It's being able to realize that your thought is going outwards, letting it go, and bringing yourself back to where you were. It's that wave. to and from.
It almost seems like focusing on your mindfulness would help to be a, would be a helpful mechanic for coping with stress too, right? If you can if you can train your mind to not worry about all those external things and just focus on what you're doing, you know, it kind of gives you a brief relapse from the stress of whatever you're got on your mind.
It's one of the things we do use mindfulness for.
I like how it brings the focus onto your body and your senses. You know, how, you know, like you were saying, you know, sitting in a park, you know, somebody that's very stressed or has a lot of anxiety, focusing on how they feel, you know, their feet on the ground when they walk, how, you know, the wind, the squirrel on the tree, you know, being in the moment, it can really take your mind off of things that you're hyper focused on. And that's causing a lot of this anxiety. You know, it's just bringing that full body, mind and body awareness together. And it's really deep,
though. Because the present moment is extremely brief.
Yeah.
The past is nothing that we can, there's nothing we can do to change it. The future is uncertain. But the past, the present is a very short amount of time. Every time we realize we are in the present, that moment now becomes the past. So we always have to reshift to the now.
Right. And also, I mean, like, I know for me, like, when I'm at work, you know, I got, like, I'm on 3 to 4 different screens at one time, or I'm using my phone, or I'm traveling, or I'm going this place and that place. And, like, you just have, like, so much going on. Like, it's, you can't, like, honestly be mindful because I'm, like, always doing 10 things at once. Mm-hmm. So doing, like, what you said where we're just going to, like, a park or something like that. Or, like, I'll take my kids to a park and just let them play. And I'll just sit there. I'll just completely relax. It kind of, like, resets my, like, mindfulness clock.
As much as we want to believe we can multitask, we cannot.
Yeah,
we can do multiple things at once. We're just splitting focus.
And I've found, like, I noticed this especially, like, after my kid was born, and I started to spend more time with him, that, like, the moments that I just kind of sit back and experience, like, what I'm in, right? I look around and I've got, you know, my wife, my son, my dog, in our house, and I look and, like, this is, like, what I dreamed about, you know, way back when. And you just kind of take in that like experience of, like, this is my life now, like, I'm happy, and just experience what's going on, like, the first time my son talked, or, you know, when he learned to walk, being there and being present for those is very important. And I find, especially once I started to get into content creation, and started to take on more things, like, this became a lot more difficult for me, because obviously, you know, being a streamer and a podcaster and all that stuff, like, relevancy and staying in touch with our communities and things like that becomes, you know, important to what we're trying to do. But at the same time, like, it's almost like having the work-life balance, right? Except now I've got two works in my life that I'm trying to balance all at once, and there's still only 24 hours in the day.
And you still have to sleep.
So that's what they tell me.
And that's very relatable for a lot of people these days.
Mm-hmm.
People are burning the candle on both ends.
Yeah.
People are burning out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing more and more people in my office suffering from burnout.
Yeah. It's a real thing.
Not because they wanted to, but because they were kind of pushed or forced into that situation where they did burn out.
Yeah. I hit that point not too long ago. Luckily, my boss was intuitive enough to notice it, and she kind of forced me into taking 4th of July week off, and we took one day of that week, and we went up to, my parents have a camp up in the Adirondack Mountains where there is no cell phone signal, there is no nothing. And we went up there and we hung out and we went into a town and walked around and went shopping and rode the ATV around and just kind of enjoyed each other's company and enjoyed, you know, nature. And it was like the perfect reset, right, for having, after being stressed about work and, you know, the content creation and all the other stuff, all the auxiliary stuff with the house and the basement remodel and everything like that.
That's awesome up. Because, like, you know, as you were saying, like, as a content creator podcaster, this, that, and the other, and, like, you know, us as just gamers, like, yeah, we, our digital media footprint is substantial. So, like, when you kind of take the time and the effort to expel that temporarily, it's refreshing, to say the least.
What you mentioned with regards to work, one of my clients told me, I think it was last week or the week before, that with their work, some of the older people had learned that you don't push the envelope, because if you do push it, you're just going to get more work.
Yeah.
And some of the newer people that were trying to make a name were motivated. They were working really hard. So rather than taking 3 hours to finish a report, they would do a really good job in 1 hour.
That's me.
They would just triple their workload.
Mm-hmm.
Because the corporation doesn't really care.
Well, yeah, I mean, because, like, at the end of the day, no, there will be work for you tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know,
but the work doesn't stop.
You know.
But the corporation just says, well, you can do this in 1 hour, so just do two others, while this one other person does one in 3 hours, and we're just going to pay you the same amount.
Yeah. And it's
just making a profit.
And it's interesting trying to balance those, right? Because from my standpoint, I fall into, like, the younger portion of that generation. And I'm trying to move up the ladder, you know, because I want to be able to support my family and give my son and my wife everything that they, you know, they deserve. So I am going to bust my butt and do the best work and the fastest work that I possibly can. And I've heard those exact conversations with some of the old timers, is like, just slow down. You know, you don't want to take on too much, because then they'll just give you more. And it's like, how do you balance that? Yeah. How do you balance that? Like, about between wanting to perform well and move up the ladder versus, you know, not getting yourself burned out.
Yeah. And I guess it's all, like, on a case by case basis. 'Cause I mean, like, if you're in a very sales driven position, like some people are, you know, you always have that mindset of, like, how competitive it can be. Like, you know, how much do I need to push without pushing myself too far and still having that job security, take care of myself and my family? But, you know, it's why sometimes it's hard to find that balancing act. And it's why taking these moments to relax and, like, do that self-care part of your day where you really just take care of yourself, even if it's just for a few minutes, is really important. But,
well said.
Yeah. Anybody else have anything to add for a mental health topic?
Not really. Not, like I said, mindfulness is so big and so large.
Right. You
can intertwine it into almost anything.
But if I would just say, if it sparked a little curiosity in you, feel free. Always, there's a lot of sources. Mayo Clinic and NAMI and a lot of various others have exercises and a little bit of history and a lot more knowledge in case you were wanted to look into it more yourself. Yeah.
And I know it's not all just about, you know, us getting distracted by our cell phones, but, you know, one thing that I've tried to do is, you know, take a block of time, you know, especially when my son is up, and leave the phone somewhere else so you're not even tempted, you know. And like Goku said, you're going to feel uncomfortable, but, you know, take that discomfort and focus it into, you know, what you're trying to focus on.
Awesome. Well, I guess we'll you know, before we move on to our gaming news, so I was the one that asked Rock to come on the show. It was just months ago, and then we finally figured out a day recently. And but, you know, we always try and start recording around 10-ish or so p.m. Eastern time.
Never happens.
So I said, Rock, shut up. yeah, no, I know, it never does. So I said, Rock, you know, where do, you know, 10 p.m., you know, Eastern time, by the way, because I wasn't sure where he lived. I said, "Where do you live, by the way?" He goes, "Oh, I live, you know, in this specific place in the United States." I said, "Oh, okay, great. Joe lives kind of close to that." He goes, "Yeah, we've talked about that before." But Rock mentioned to me, like, "Yeah, we're right in the same area, but he hasn't invited me over for dinner yet."
So what?
I said, "You know what? Joe and I have, like, not the best, like, syncing time for, like, talking, like, between jobs, kids, this, that, and the other." I said, "You know what? The perfect opportunity to ask him when we record next week. So, Joe, why haven't you invited Rock over for dinner yet?"
Well, you could ask the same thing to him. He hasn't invited me to his house.
It's true. It probably has something to do with, it's probably about a 6-hour drive for each of us to get to each other, even though we do live in the same area.
See, I live down at the bottom by the border of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, you know, I'm always looking for a road trip.
So
I got weekends off.
It's funny. So, I mean, obviously, live in New York, and when I went to college, I went to college in Michigan, and the start of every class was always the same. They're like, "Tell us, you know, your name and your major and maybe something interesting about yourself that we might not know." And my interesting fact was always that I lived in New York for 20 years, and I've never been to New York City. And to this day, now we're at, you know, 32 years, and I still have never been to New York City, but I've lived in New York all my life. But it's also like an 8-hour drive to the city for me.
See, it's only 2.5 for me.
Mm-hmm.
See, what I think you should do, I'm from Boston, so I've been in New York a shitload of times.
Yeah.
But, like, I think you need to try and go as long as you can until you have to go there. But in the meantime, create a pool so you can make some cash out of it.
It's good. Yeah, it's a good idea.
And, like, profit. When it gets up to a certain point, like, you find someone, they're like, "Oh, well, I don't think he's going to go till he's, like, 53.
Yeah.
Or, like, when that pool reaches that, like, I don't know,
it's time to cash out for retirement.
2,000 bucks. You're like, "Yeah, you know, I can upgrade my stream a little bit."
Yeah.
And then you're like, "Let's do it.
Let's do it." He might
be only 2 Uber rides away from getting to that milestone if he's going to the city. Just bring somebody down with you and charge him.
Hey, even the Canadian's been to New York City.
I was raised in a city, but I'm a country boy at heart. I have no desire to go to a New York City or anything like that. I just
me neither. I live. Yeah.
I love the city.
I could live further away from this city.
Yeah, I'm actively trying to move further away.
See, I did the opposite. I lived in the country forever, and I just bought a house in a city. And I'm throwing my neighbors off, that's for sure. But
you stop parking on their lawn.
And to think, I own a four-wheeler and this and that, and I had to yell at a guy for riding a four-wheeler on the road. And usually I'm like, four-wheelers, whatever. But that was a different story.
Off my lawn.
You know what? It might only be 20 by 18, but that's my lawn. You know?
That's not a bad lawn.
But it's bigger than that. There's a front and a back to it. If you add them together, it's a lot of space. No, I love going to New York City. 18. If you've never been, you gotta go, man. And I'll tell you what, I've traveled down so many times by myself just for leisure.
Yeah,
nothing like it, man. You'll love it.
I'm sure it's incredible. It's just
it's an experience.
Yeah, like that.
See, I like the museums.
I can respect that. Like, I can respect the experience. It's just, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of people. So I try to get as far away from them as possible.
You're a fortunate now.
People, that's why you manage a 2,000 person mixer community.
Hey, I didn't say that I'm good at everything I do, but
awesome. But anyways, moving along to some gaming news. I have a few things on there. So the biggest thing, the Joy-Con lawsuit that was put in a U.S. federal court for the Western Districts of Washington State in Seattle against Nintendo on the Joy-Cons. I know personally, for our Nintendo Switch, two of my Joy-Cons experience this. Now, the lawsuit is about the what can happen with the Joy-Con controllers with the drift. Basically, debris can get into the hardware that's underneath the thumbstick. So basically what it's doing is it's doing like phantom movements. You won't be touching it whatsoever, but whatever game you're playing, or even if you're just on the main title screen, the cursor will move or your character will move or whatever is going on, and it'll just like drift randomly. And there are like certain things you can do to kind of negate that a little bit. Like I've done it on ours where you use eyeglass cleaner in there and like compressed air and this, that, and the other. But it's a way that it's enclosed underneath it where stuff's just getting in there really easily. Mm-hmm. And there are other instances where it doesn't even have to do with that. It's just really troublesome if you want to play games. So I just bought like the full-on Xbox-style controllers for the Switch. Someone filed a lawsuit, and, like, people are jumping in on it, and it's interesting. And so you can send the Joy-Cons back to Nintendo. You got to pay for the shipping to get there, the shipping to get back, which at that point you spend another $20, and you can just have a brand-new one. But this specific guy who wants this lawsuit... he did that, and he got it back like 3 months later, something ridiculous. And since then, he's bought two more brand new Joy-Cons, and almost immediately they started doing the exact same thing. But no, I just thought that was interesting that someone's filed a lawsuit about it.
Is this dude like eating Cheetos while he's gaming, or like?
Well, no, I mean
it's got to collect a lot of gunk in a short amount of time.
But no, so stuff can get in there so easily. It's not like the PlayStation controllers, because there's like almost like rubber flap at the base of it, and like you use a pair of tweezers and you pull that back, and like you can see like the hardware in there. So like it's a huge design flaw that people have been complaining about pretty much since a couple months after the Switch came out.
But is it lawsuit worthy?
I mean, I'm pissed about my controller, so I'm fine with it.
Is it like Equifax? Like,
is it like what?
Is it Equifax? No, no.
Well, it's like the MacBook Phantom key press issue with the new butterfly switches.
Yeah, it's basically doing like a phantom input when there shouldn't be.
I had an Xbox controller that did that, and if I launched into the tower in Destiny 1 and like walked away to get a drink, I would come back and I'd be down at like the Vanguard table.
Oh, I'd be doing that too, but it had nothing to do with my controller, just that my raid team were dicks.
Well, yeah. I got that too.
Some bad memories from that age.
What's that?
Some good memories when people went AFK.
Oh, yeah, I have a lot.
We got somebody.
Especially at Sisters.
We actually got somebody. You know the labyrinth between Golgoroth and, like, where you come across the bridges?
Mm-hmm.
Where you run into Golgoroth?
You mean the dick wall?
No. Prior to that. The maze. You got to get through the maze. Yeah, we pushed somebody. He went AFK at the entrance of that, and we pushed him all the way to the door of Golgoroth. And we had to get people crouching underneath and stacking on top of each other to push him and punch him to get him to kind of go up the ramp that we made for him and get him over these walls and stuff.
You guys were motivated.
It took 45 minutes, but we got him there, damn it. He came back and he's like, "What the hell, guys?"
I'm just more concerned you raid with people that go AFK for 45 minutes.
That's a long time.
It was a long time, but we were pretty relaxed back then, and this was like we could run the King's Fall in 40 minutes. I mean,
not if you're AFK for 45.
Well, that added, it was a 2-hour raid night that night, Let's not focus on the negative here.
No.
that was a feat to behold, I'm telling you.
Tier 1 content.
That's just damn right it was.
Clearly Tier 1 content. So the guys at Respawn and Apex, with Apex Legends, they pretty much came out and announced that they're going to be looking into tactics to combat mouse and keyboard players on console. I just put that in because I was curious what you all thought about that. And like, I personally, I don't care if someone on console is using a mouse and keyboard. It doesn't bother me whatsoever.
It does give you an advantage, for sure.
Yeah, I just don't... I mean, like, I'm the guy... I use a controller to play Siege on PC. It's like, I hate keyboard and mouse thing. But, like, my problem is, like, there's almost no workaround for people that... So for these companies to kind of monitor this, there's the Zim, X-I-M, the Zim device. It's to help connect the keyboard and mouse to a console. Widely popular.
You can just buy the official ones from Sony.
Yeah, because we all trust Sony 100%. But no, but no. So, but the Zim device is very integral and important to people using adaptive controllers. Mm-hmm. And it kind of puts the same input in there as it looks like a keyboard and mouse player on console. So if they're going to target these people because they are possibly have some type of disability or physical anomaly that prevents them from playing with a regular controller, so they have to use these adaptive Zim devices to connect them. That would like sincerely piss me off.
Can I give a hot take on this?
Yeah, go ahead. Always.
So, I think the difference between mouse and keyboard and controller gets overblown a lot of times.
Always.
Especially in this situation, because I know for a fact that the Zim devices and devices similar, all they're doing is they're mapping a PC input to a controller input. Right, so anything that can be physically that can be done on a controller is mimicked in PC. So you don't get like the faster movement, you don't get as precise, because moving your mouse to the left is mapped to putting the stick to the left. So it's not a one-to-one map like you would have on say PC. I think where the advantage comes is being able to push multiple buttons that your fingers just can't physically push on a controller. But they're right next to each other on a keyboard. That's where you get an advantage. But
that and macros.
Yeah, I mean, I think macros are less prevalent than a lot of people think. I do see them occasionally, like in higher levels of Destiny PvP. I'll see people that macro like crouch, right? But every situation.
Macro Titan skating.
Well, that was a scroll wheel. But yeah, I mean, my point is like, a lot of times these macros are situational, right? They work really well in MMOs where you're doing the same 10 button pushes every encounter. Every encounter in Apex or in Destiny or in any of those games is not identical, right? So to put a macro together to do something would have to be so specific to that encounter that I think it would be tough to do. I don't think... Like, I get why they're doing it, because I'm sure there's a lot of outrage from console players saying people are using mouse and keyboard on PC or on console. It happened in Destiny 1. It happened in Destiny 2. It's been happening for years, but I've noticed on PC that there's a trend of starting to balance the input devices. So, like, on Destiny... The way that controller is balanced versus mouse and keyboard with both the recoil control as well as the aim assist, controller players do very well on PC, which is unheard of. In 10 years ago, using a controller and a shooter on PC was absolutely unheard of. I think as technology grows and as the companies start to be more aware of the idea of cross play coming, that these input devices are coming a lot closer together than people think.
Awesome. Also, in other news, if you guys haven't seen it, watch the trailer for Mr. Rogers. Because Tom Hanks is going to be Mr. Rogers. And, like, he doesn't look a hell of a lot like him, but, like, it's close enough. But, like, the way he speaks, the way he acts...
well, it's Tom
just,
Hanks.
Yeah, and like, honestly, there's no other A-list actor... that like, personality-wise, the person, like, you couldn't have found a better match just based off of his reputation. And I loved, there's, like, a little quote from the trailer. It's him saying to the interviewee in the movie, he goes, you know, sometimes people need help and that's okay. You know, and I love that, obviously.
I'm so excited for this movie.
Oh, for sure, dude. it's going to be so good.
See, in Canada, we didn't have Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers wasn't really a thing for us. We had Mr. Dress-Up.
Hmm.
That was my childhood.
Mr. Dress-Up.
Similar concept?
Similar concept. A little bit different. So we had Mr. Dress-Up, and then you had Fred Penner. And then you had Sesame Street.
Hmm. Yeah, we always had that and Reading Rainbow.
Yeah, I think Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street were the ones that I grew up on as a kid.
Right. Awesome.
And then Barney came out and drove my parents crazy.
Barney was after my time, so.
Right. The last thing I had. Mostly because I've been playing GTA, and that I had mentioned earlier that, you know, the casino update came out, and there's already people. I was reading a BBC article, and it got brought up again with loot boxes in one of the sessions of the British House of Commons in Parliament, talking about how it needs to be analyzed again to decide whether or not it's gambling. But like at the end of the day, you can't win money out of it. You can't win real money out of it.
But you got to remember how they classified it or how they described it. It's a surprise mechanic.
That's how EA described it. Not Rockstar.
I looked so intently. I rewatched the YouTube video of that here and just focused on the person reading the paper. But it's like, how hard was it for them to just say that? It was like, it's not gambling. It's not a loot crate. It's
a surprise mechanic.
Yeah, no, it's just that was actually like a... Like, stop trying to make up words.
It sounded good. How many of y'all have younger kids?
I do.
We all do.
Okay. Maybe it's just me, but, like, my kid's into these things called mashems, right? And they're, like, a little tube.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Little box that you buy for, like, $3 or $4.
Oh, yeah.
And they get a random, like, Paw Patrol character inside.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, like, my kids do the same thing with the...
There's all kinds of them. Like, there's tons. Like,
surprise eggs and this, that, and the other.
And I'm like, these are loot boxes. Like, we're conditioning the kids to use loot boxes. And I couldn't believe it, like, when we first got them. But then there's, like, a whole section in Target. Like, there's a whole wall of, like, all these different... loot box esque things for, you know, small children, and I've always wondered, like, what's
around forever?
What's like
those types of toys have been around forever here.
Yeah,
in Canada,
surprise toys. Yeah, I mean, they've
Kinder
been around.
Surprise. Yeah, you know, they're outlawed in the U.S. But for us, Kinder Surprise, you get chocolate, you get the little toy that you throw in the garbage later on. But people collected some of those.
Oh, it's not outlawed in the U.S. Yeah, everywhere down here.
Really?
Everywhere.
Kinder Surprises
all over the place here. Every supermarket you go into, they're right there by the checkout stand. But yeah, once again, the loot box debacle comes up again. I just think it's stupid. Like, they would not. Like, I'm sorry. I don't see an issue.
Surprise mechanic.
I'm kind of curious on the loot boxes a little bit. Like, what do you guys think about them being classified as gambling?
No, it's not gambling. It's a product. It's a product within a digital product in a game. I don't have any problem with it. The only difference between that and, say, buying the whatever so you can get whatever skin is, you don't know which one it is.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's random, and I'm fine with it. It doesn't bother me whatsoever.
If it's the only way to get access, to that particular skin, I can see where it'd be a money suck. But
no.
If you can level up to get some of those things, I don't see any problem with it.
No, I mean, like, and I could see if it was like an exclusive thing, like you could only get it through the loot boxes or whatever. Like, I could see being annoyed by it, but I still don't think it's gambling. You know, because at the end of the day, the gambling is I'm wagering this money in hopes of winning more money. If you can't win money from it or financial compensation, it's not gambling.
But it's designed in a way to prey on the psyche of younger kids that are not able to kind of differentiate or able to pull back from it.
Right, and at that point, that's a parenting issue.
I agree wholeheartedly. Because they're designed to be very incentivized. There's the bright colors, the nice animations.
Right.
The lights, for sure. The sounds. And kids say, ooh, I want this. This is fun. And then you can get a $5,000 credit card bill.
Well, it's driving that impulse sale, too. I mean, they're marketing it and they're packaging it to catch your eye. I mean, the same thing we do with our company. We put racks within 6 feet of the register. Within 6 feet of the register, you increase 70% of your sales.
Oh, for
just
sure.
From somebody standing there. So if somebody's in a lobby waiting to go into a match and, ooh, look at this. This is what we have new in the store this week. This one has a 24-hour timer on it. And it's like all bells and whistles and pretty and everything. You might get that. But for $7.50, you know, you got to take a chance and see if you get it. Roll the dice. Well, the only time I see if it's an issue is if there's a game-breaking mechanic being offered randomly through it or character base, like Battlefront. They went to the extent, instead of like earning, if you could just buy the characters, you know.
Yeah.
It was random, but you had a pretty good chance. That's the only time I see. If it's flashy skins, this,
if
that.
If it's cosmetic,
cosmetic.
I don't see a problem.
Yeah, I've never had a problem with cosmetic microtransactions. I mean, in fact, I like them. I think it gives you a little bit of personality to the game. But, I mean, I understand that there's people out there that they hear the word microtransaction and they just shudder. And,
yeah.
You should be able to earn whatever is in the store through gameplay. But a lot of those things are pulled back or require an exorbitant amount of XP to get a loot box. Mm-hmm. With the example that we can use is Destiny. I don't find the loot boxes in Destiny, those bright engrams, too bad. You get them all the time.
Yeah.
You play the game and you play it often enough, you're going to get everything you want without buying any of those engrams.
Yeah. I think especially since like the refresh of the Eververse store, like I think that's gotten better. Like I like the fact that things show up for silver. And you know what? If I want to spend money on something to have it, go ahead. Or I can wait and see if maybe someday it shows up for Bright Dust and I can use the, you know, few thousand Bright Dust that I've amassed from just playing the game and buy it that way without having to spend any money.
Or just have it drop by getting an Ingram.
Yeah, or just play the game and get lucky and have it drop.
Mm-hmm. I think that system is a lot better than some of the other systems that are around.
Want to move on to our character analysis, Dr. Goku?
Sure. Speaking of Destiny, the character this week is Osiris. One of my favorite characters in the Destiny lore before they kind of butchered him in Curse of Osiris.
Rest in peace.
On a side note, I finally got my Destiny comic collection.
Nice. Did you get the lithograph?
Yeah, I did.
Nice.
I think everyone got the same one.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, you could only get that through the store.
Yeah, that will be framed. So nice. A lot of Osiris's story is fleshed out in that comic, because there's not a lot in game. And like I mentioned, Osiris, not much is known about the exiled former Vanguard commander and warlock Vanguard. What we know comes more after the events of Curse of Osiris DLC and within the Bungie-made comic. Warlocks are a very different guardian compared to their Titan and Hunter brethren. They also seek to understand the universe and the powers that shape it. Two of the most notable are Tolan the Shattered, who was obsessed with the Hive and their sword logic, and Osiris, whose obsession with the Vex branded him a heretic. Osiris has been a guardian for a very long time, previously thought to be a Golden Age mistake, a lie that was spread by Lysander, the leader of the Concordat, in his younger days. In the early days of the Last City, Osiris studied under Lord Felwinter and Nirwyn until they ultimately were killed following their attempt to contain Siva. This was when the Speaker rose to power and established the Consensus and the First Vanguard. Tallulah Fairwind was named the Hunter Vanguard. Saint 14, Osiris's good friend and Six Fronts war ally, was named Titan Vanguard. Due to Osiris's prowess, Saint 14 suggested that Osiris be named not only as the Warlock Vanguard, but as the Vanguard Commander. As the commander, Osiris became close with the Speaker as well as his apprentice. As any warlock, Osiris had an inner yearning for truth, more importantly, about the Guardians and the Darkness. This quest and his ensuing theories were branded as blasphemous. He garnered a cult following that was branded as the Cult of Osiris, who followed his theories, but diverting the responsibilities as Guardians or as regular cities, city people. His theories were also implied as inspiring Kabir to form the fire team to raid the Vault of Glass. While researching the Hive and the Vex, Osiris also prophesied the coming of Oryx. His research made the Speaker very wary, which led him to exile Osiris, branding him a heretic like Tolan before him. This is also evident of how the Speaker and Osiris's relationship began to strain, as he questioned the Speaker's role not only as a leader, but as a dictator. Rather than being cast out, Osiris willingly left the city, and Ikora, his best student and apprentice, as his successor as Warlock Vanguard. We do not hear much from the mighty Warlock until the Curse of Osiris DLC. While his disciples tried to recruit stronger guardians to their cause with the Trials of Osiris, he was exploring and researching the Vex, more precisely the Infinite Forest on Mercury. This is where he found Panoptes, the Infinite Mind, who was the Vex mind directing the Vex in the solar system. This is also where the Guardian comes in to help Osiris defeat Panoptes, stopping Osiris' vision of a full Vex victory from happening. People often brand Osiris as a cult leader, but he never wanted any part of his cult. He was first and foremost a researcher trying to provide knowledge and truth to the city in order to help protect it from the looming threat of the Vex, when most were focused on the fallen threat. Branded a heretic for his suggestions and obsessions with the Vex, many could have labeled him from suffering from OCPD, which is an obsessive compulsive personality disorder. While Osiris does fit many diagnostic criteria and behaviors associated with OCPD, like devotion to work and productivity to an extent that is excessive and not explained by economic needs, excessive conscientious, and inflexibility related to morality or values, rigidity, and stubbornness, However, Osiris's obsessions with the Vex does not come from a place of pathology, but one of worry for his fellow guardians and the people they are trying to protect. While he was exiled by the Speaker, this was not due to him merely pointing out the looming threat, but because he was delving into topics that could have unmasked the Speaker, as we would later learn, was not a vessel for the Traveler, but mainly someone who saw a way to grab power and tried to hold on to it at any cost. With everything that we know of Osiris, what are your guys' perspective on the character?
Well, I like in the comic, it shows a warlock using multiple, like, subclasses and this and that. And it really painted a picture about how he never intended on becoming as... What
cultish?
Would the word be?
Cultish?
Yes, very much so. He never wanted it. And so when the disciples were around, he was just like, grumble. He paid no mind to them. Yeah, he was a researcher. He was, obsessed with his work and the Vax and everything. So it was really interesting seeing a lot of that. I know I'm in love with the freaking voice actor, though. Sorry, I keep rambling.
Well, I know, I think he was definitely viewed by others as eccentric, with a negative connotation. But I always felt like he would agree that he's eccentric, but not in a negative light. Yeah, he was a thinker. That makes sense.
He saw a threat and tried to warn people of an upcoming threat.
Yeah, but
trying to gather proof for people to believe him.
And to play devil's advocate here, right? They're just coming off the Battle of Six Fronts. The fallen threat is still real, and now you've got some guy talking about somebody over on Venus.
Because Twilight Gap was just coming, was really close to starting. In the comic, you can see Cade mentioning to Andal that he knows where the Kell of Kings is,
mm-hmm.
and the start of Twilight Gap.
Yeah. So, I mean, from like the city folk and the other, Vanguard standpoint, like the task at hand is the Fallen. They're the most immediate threat. And whether the Vex were the ultimate threat or not, like, it's hard for them to take their eyes off of that when the Fallen were right outside the walls.
But the comics also paints a different picture of the Speaker. Certainly in the Osiris one, where Ikora saying that she can take Osiris's place in his absence, and the Speaker just kind of shuns her away.
I've always wondered, right? Because if we put the lore books and we put the comics in universe, that they become essentially the history books of Destiny.
Yeah.
And who writes the history books? You know what I mean? Whose bias, whose spin is on this? And that could lead to some of that. And I'm sure, like, knowing the Bungie's writers, like, they have thought into this far enough to think along those lines. And it may still not be the true story, but as players, we're taking it as essentially gospel. But it definitely seems like there is some bias towards certain characters, almost as if, the side that is won is the one writing the history book, so to speak.
Well, I know, aside from the comics and the lore books, when the second DLC for Destiny 2 came out, Curse of Osiris, in the Destiny community, on Twitter, just kind of, blew up seeing him, seeing the voice acting, seeing the animation, of finally seeing what the hell this guy looks like.
Because Osiris was this mythical warlock.
Yep.
Right, no, well, he was the one everyone was like, there was, there was, it was the one people were clamoring for in Destiny 1 to know more about, outside of the grimoire and the lore history. They wanted to see this guy. They wanted to kind of like know who he was, put a face to him. But I do know that when that DLC dropped, everyone went nuts as far as like finally like meeting him.
It's not my Osiris.
Well, I think a lot of that had to do with like you said, like there was so much lore, you know, whether it was directly in the grimoire cards or like the hints that were, you know, hidden around like the lighthouse and whatnot. And then it felt like such a throwaway story for him when they finally did release him in the Curse of Osiris DLC, that it was like we had this, you know, essentially 3-year build up through Destiny 1. Just
because Osiris was branded as a warlock that was in perma radiance.
Yeah,
true. And it was so ominous. I mean, nobody knew anything. I mean, you painted your own picture.
Yeah.
So everybody had him looking how he was described in the grimoire. No, it's just an old man with building, you know, the connect blocks.
Although it kind of makes sense that what we learned and what we saw because of people building him up in the cult.
Exactly. He was idolized at that point. Yeah.
It's almost meta the way the Destiny community treated him, right? They built him up to be this big character, and then once we finally found out what he was, it was kind of a letdown.
But we're all still screaming for, you know, Trials of Osiris to come back.
Yeah.
The real Trials of Osiris. Give some love to that ultimate fanboy, Brother Vance. You know, that boy has put some dedication into his... Have you seen his broom closet behind him? It's nothing but pictures. I mean, it looks like my office.
I feel like Brother Vance is that person, that guy or gal everyone knows from high school, that every time you see him, they're like, hey, you remember that one time? Like, God damn it, yes, Vance, I remember that one time.
It was 13 years ago. Let it go.
It was 13 years ago, and no, I don't talk to her still, and I will not mention you, and she does not talk about you, I'm sure. Sorry.
Awesome. Did you have anything else on Brother Osiris?
Up to now, we have nothing really more in the lore. I highly recommend people reading the comic, even if you don't buy the comic. You can read it on Bungie's website for free.
Oh, really? You can?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comics are fantastic.
All of the comics there. Comic collection has, I think, one or two extra comics within it that is not on the Bungie website.
But it's great because it's a hardcover, which threw me off. I didn't think it was going to come in a hardcover bind.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's a hardcover bind.
Oh, man.
It's awesome.
Y'all making me spend money I don't have again.
Stupid Bungie store making me spend money.
No, but so, I even off of the website, like the writing and the artwork and all the comics is really good. Definitely highly recommend it.
Fantastic. Awesome. Well, Dr. Goku, thank you for taking the time to bring us some insight on Osiris. Dave's not here. He was going to do community news. Joe, do you have anything? Do you know of anything else going on in the community? Do you have any news?
It's been pretty quiet this week. No, nothing is really sparking to my mind. It's been a pretty quiet couple weeks.
Rock, who do you have coming on your podcast next?
Actually, tomorrow night I'll be interviewing Captain Cripple, who is one half of Boots on the Ground, who is a partnered channel over on Mixer.
Yeah. Nice. Well, if we don't have anything else, that kind of wraps us up this week. Next week, we're going to have... our buddy and supporter, Jopa Writes, is going to be coming on. Isn't that right, Joe?
Week after next. Not next week.
Well, the week after.
Right.
Next episode.
Yeah.
Semantics.
He knew what he meant.
He meant what he knew.
Yes, sir. Yes, he is.
Rock, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitch, Facebook, Instagram at Rock City Roller, YouTube at Rock City Roller TV, and Twitter at Rock City Roller 1. Any of those are really good places to get a hold of me. I'm usually on Twitter like all day though, so definitely my DM should be open. So if you want to reach out and chat or anything like that, let me know.
Fantastic. You know, when you Google Rock City Roller, you also come up with a women's derby league.
Yeah, I'm really
working. The Rock City Rollers.
I'm really working on that search engine optimization.
You need to you need to ask them if you can, like, do a stream there.
So, funny story. Like,
bring your stream set up.
Funny story, I made my gaming page on Facebook, right? So, my Rock City Roller is facebook.com/Rock City Roller, whatever. I got a notification the other day that I had been tagged in a photo. And I'm like, what is going on, right? And so I opened Facebook, and there's a picture of, like, this lady and her son posting with, like, posing with, like, this roller derby team. And they tagged my page instead of their page. And I'm just like, awkward.
That's awesome. One of my English teachers from high school, couple years after I graduated, early 2000s, she went and, like, quit her teaching career and became, like, a roller derby star in Chicago or something like
If you watch, like, any of their videos on YouTube,
they're,
like,
hardcore.
Oh, man. They're gnarly. But, yeah, it used to be when you searched Rock City Roller, you didn't get any of me. And now I'm starting to move up there, and you can actually find me amongst all the roller derby clips. But we'll get there.
Thank you all for joining the project this week. You can reach us on Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, Facebook, all the places at Project Guardians. We have an awesome website, projectguardians.org, all sorts of mental health resources on there. Some of Dr. Goku's awesome character analyses are on there as well, beautifully artistically enhanced by Hatchy Dave, who isn't here. He's on his farm going on over his MySpace account.
Dave's not here, man.
And we also have a very awesome and supportive Discord with all sorts of resources on there, great and wonderful people, which is pinned on our Twitter, and there's also a link on our website, projectguardians.org. You can listen to us on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, everywhere you listen to podcasts. Joe, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Twitter at AverageJoe227 and Discord. That's about it.
Pretty awesome.
And Dr. Goku. They can find me everywhere at SSJ5Goku28.
Fantastic. When's your next YouTube video going up?
Whenever I have some time to edit it.
There you go. Just gotta hire a production team.
Big move.
I almost need to.
Yeah.
And I'm Sentinel Dad. You can reach me everywhere. Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, just search Sentinel Dad, you'll find me. Extra D on the end on Twitter. I'm going to start streaming some stuff on Mixer soon, too, just to give it the old college try. But again, thank you all for joining the project this week, and we will see you next time. Bye.
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 Bye, everyone.
Just so you know, Dr. Goku, I work for cheap.